So you mentioned the millionaires. These are franchisees, I'm assuming, that are doing seven figures or more in revenue. Yep. They're not doing that alone.
Oh, no, somewhere. Wow. The one that we talked about that did sold for $4.5 million, he was on his own.
Hey, everyone, this is Cliff, and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back, and I hope you enjoy this episode with Dennis Schooley, founder of Schooley Mitchell, the largest independent cost reduction consulting firm in North America. Today, we're discussing how they saved their clients over $600 million, how a franchise owner with zero employees sold his franchise for $4.5 million, and all this being accomplished with a $70,000 initial investment. We really hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Pursuit of Profit, Phrenosity, Cliff, Justin, and guests of the podcast may maintain positions in the franchises discussed on this podcast.
So you are the founder of Schooley Mitchell.
Yes.
What is Schooley Mitchell? What do you do? Tell us about the model.
Yeah, I do have an accounting background, and I always say to people, I hopefully my personality doesn't belie that, but anyway, that is my background. I am a CPA. And really the business started from those roots. I've always been a business development kind of guy though. So even in our accounting practice, we got into things like management consulting and computer consulting, even sports consulting were things that we did. And as a result, our own at the time was telecom, what we were looking at. Now we look at 16 different cost categories now, but in the very beginning, 25 years ago, we looked at telecom and we found that our own telecom costs were really going up quite significantly. Now we kind of knew why, because we had people traveling all over because of these agreements we were making with clients that needed our services, but we wanted to better get a better handle on it. So when we asked one of our programmers to write us some fairly rudimentary software to help us look at it properly, we found out we were paying 30% more than we should. And we kind of thought, well, aren't we stupid? And then we went, wait a minute here. If we're stupid, probably our 700 accounting clients are stupid too. And, you know, I say that tongue in cheek, of course, but Right. Of course they were. They, you know, they sell cars or they manufacture tables or whatever they do, they're good at, but they're sure not good at looking these types of expenses in detail and understanding where they can cut out the fat. And so that's how it started. And one of our clients in the beginning was a franchise company that we had converted from cash registers to computers. So that's how far back it goes. So I learned a lot about franchising through that entity, that franchise company. And so when these things sort of came together, more by providence than anything else, it really made it a clear path that this is what we should be doing, because we can help companies all over Canada and all over the United States. And that's really how it's evolved.
You started in the 80s in Canada.
It would have been the 90s. I mean, we did some of the services I was talking about in the accounting world in the 80s, but it would have been the 90s when we actually, you know, decided to start offering this service, first of all, to our own clients, and then started to franchise in the early 2000s.
Okay. And then you came to the United States franchising in what year?
2004, I guess, was the first time when we actually started to franchise in the U.S.
And the distribution channel is how big? Where are you now in terms of size?
We have about 260 franchises, about 40 in Canada, about 220 in the U.S. That will eventually become 10 to 1 because that's roughly what the population ratio is. But right now we're a little Canada heavy just because that's where we started. But Right. Basically it's a 10 to 1 ratio, just like it should be.
Very cool.
Congrats. 260 is a big number.
When most never get to 100, 260 is an enviable number.
Well, you know, there are some hurdles. You know, you got to get that first one to get to that first dozen. And then when you get to that first dozen, it changes everything. And then when you get to 50, and then you get 100, and then you get to 200, you know, they're all hurdles you have to get over. And, you know, we've gotten over those, and then we're developing now 260. I think the next hurdle might be 500, you know, where things significantly change. So we're looking forward to that.
Justin, this is an open territory model, so we're very familiar with that. Which, when he says 500, you know, a lot of brands go, whoa, slow down. No, he could do it easily.
And there's pros and cons, right? We should probably talk about that, how the open territory model works, because the concern obviously is how many other people are playing in my sandbox, right? Am I competing against the brand, or no, am I benefiting from having other franchise owners out there doing this?
Yeah.
How does it work, Dennis?
The reality is that saturation is probably 100 years away for us. There's so many opportunities here. When we first set out our footprint model, you know, we decided that we weren't going to use geographic territories because, you know, telecommunications transcends territories by its definition. I mean, that's what it is. So we didn't want to say to somebody, you can have a client in Detroit. They've got branches in Denver, Toronto, Orlando, and Boston, and you can't do those. That didn't make any sense. So we basically said, you know what? We're not going to use geography like most franchises do. We're going to instead protect your clients on a registry system and protect your prospects up to certain limits. Well, you know what? We've been doing that for more than 20 years. It works great. We never have conflicts. And yet it allows people to pursue their opportunities. Now, back to your question in saturation. We decided back then that if we gave everybody a footprint of one for every 200,000 people, that would be more than they could ever do in their lifetime. It would give them more than enough. And that's when we just did telecom. Well, we've stayed with that same footprint, and now we do 16 different cost categories. So there's more opportunity that anybody could ever sort of satisfy. And let me give you a little grounding in that. You know, here's what we know. For every million people in the US and Canada, there's 80,000 businesses. Granted, some are moms and pops and, you know, not applicable, but there's 80,000 businesses for every million people. So we know that if somebody has that opportunity, now we don't isolate it by geography. We say, look, there's Toronto. They got 9 million. We're going to have 5 for every million. We could have 45 franchises in Toronto, but that still gives them more than they could ever do. See, our millionaire franchisees really only have 200, 250, 300 clients. Well, that's out of 80,000. And that's only if you stay within your own million. So there's just no, we've done right. A lot of work. We've gained a lot of clout over time. We've done 29,000, 30,000 clients, but there's 86 million companies. So we got a ways to go.
Right. There is protection though. You're not protecting the territory. You are protecting the client.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about someone else in the Schooley Mitchell system calling on my customers to try to take them.
Absolutely not. We have what we call a permanent registry, which is for clients. And you know, every franchisee can get as many permanent clients as they want. And that's really important from three aspects. What it means is that nobody else can do business with that client, and that protects their revenue stream. It means we don't knock heads and compete and bid against each other and look unprofessional, but it also protects their asset. Because see, the asset that gets sold is the client base that has the annuities attached to it. Yeah, so now your clients are protected, right. So your asset's protected. So that's how it works. And then we have a different registry for prospects that works in a different way.
Cliff, I just want to stay here for a second. So the client, is it a transactional business? Is it like I go in, I win the customer, we do an audit, we save them money, and that's it? I never talk to them again? Or is there any recurrence? Like how long do I maintain this customer for?
Yeah, listen, we've got clients 8, 10, 12, 15 years because they just want us to keep managing these expenses. So what we do is we do that initial analysis from their prior bills and contracts and things like that. So we can show them what we think their best strategy is. And we'll lay that out. We usually give them three or four options in our, what we call a value report. Once they select what's best for them, now we're gonna look at their bills every month, minimum for 3 years. Looking, one, to show them how we calculate the savings, but two, looking at the market again, or looking at their business, because if there's changes, sometimes a different plan is better for them. So we'll continually do that on their behalf. Now they don't have to worry about any of these costs. They just simply manufacture tables or sell cars. That's what they're good at. That's how they build their revenues. So we're going to look at all this stuff that's below that gross margin line. You know, companies are dying by death by 1,000 cuts. Well, we put the band-aids on the cuts. That's what we do.
This is a dream annuitized business. Absolutely.
100%.
And that's why, and we love asymmetrical investments. 70 grand buy-in. You need a limited amount of operating capital. Get out there and hustle. There is so much to unpack with this brand that we could literally just stay right here for the entire podcast. Let me explain why. The audience understands we're in the expense reduction business. Everyone's going, I don't know anything about that. Good, because you don't need to.
Right.
That's the best part of this brand. We're going to do that. You have 150 employees in your corporate office scouring through all these invoices saying, ooh, look at this. That's a win. That they're overbilling by 38%, you know, cha-ching. They also don't understand that you're doing all that work. All they have to do is sell. When I say sell, they have to meet with people. They have to get in front of them, explain the service, and then bring the invoices back to your team for evaluation.
That's exactly right. We've got experts in each of the different cost categories. Now, they're going to obtain the client. They're going to build the relationship. They're going to work with the client to get referrals and renewals. They're going to present the reports back to the client with our help, by the way. All the analysts that did the work on it, they're going to be there to support them. But that's what the franchisee is doing, that fun stuff out in the community, talking with people, presenting. We're going to do all that nitty gritty. Not me, by the way. We've got people. So they're going to tear through the bills and the contracts, and they're going to be on hold with the vendors, not the franchisee, and certainly not the client. And that's the value that we deliver. So you're exactly right, Cliff.
So you're going, so let's take a client so that the audience understands. Okay, I wasn't interested a minute ago. Now you have my attention because I'm a sales guy. So I could go out and press the flesh with people and build relationships, but I'm not an accountant and I don't know how to audit invoices. Now I just learned I don't have to.
You don't want to.
And I don't want to. Thank you. Right. If I owned a Supercuts, I don't want to cut hair. If I owned a dog grooming business, I don't want to groom animals. I don't want to do this either. But I do like the business and I do love the annuitization of it. And I do love the feel good of it, which is I'm going to help you save money. That money can be used in other areas of your organization, whether it's bonuses, recruiting, hiring, or expanding, right? So once I get this client, let's use a car dealership. Your franchisee gets in the car dealership, they get a box of invoices, send it back to you. When you refer to this 3-year look back or look forward, you're looking forward 3 years.
Yeah, we're using history to calculate what the strategy will be and show what the savings could be if you did this, but we're looking at the future to actually calculate the savings, yes.
Because you're sharing in the savings for a 3-year period and then the savings goes to the customer in perpetuity?
That's correct.
After the 3 years?
That's correct.
What is the split? If you saved my organization $1,000 a month,
yep.
What is the franchisee keeping?
The franchisee is going to go 50-50 for 3 years. After that, the client keeps it all. However, if we find another chunk of savings because we found some other opportunities, that chunk will have a 3-year life from that point forward. And that's why clients want us to perpetuate the service, because we're continually looking to drive down their prices based on how they're changing or how the market's changing. So yeah, but it's 50% for 3 years as well.
Okay, that's interesting. I love it.
When you set a box of bills, the majority of the time, we're going to get the credentials and get the bills off the internet ourselves. You know, it's not like we're asking for their bank statement. It's just their FedEx bill. It's nothing private. So it's
username and password. Take it. Go do what you have to do with it. Right.
Now, some companies don't want to do that. So we will get 3 months worth of bills and we'll use that to calculate what we need to calculate to show them what we can do. And it isn't just price negotiation either, by the way. We look at how they manage these things. So think of waste, for example. We don't just look at negotiating the price, which we do. But we look at, okay, do you have the right size of bin? Should it be bigger or smaller? Is it picked up too often or too much? Are you putting the right stuff in there? So we do all of that type of analysis too.
What percentage of these audits turn into finding cost savings?
Oh, almost all. I mean, it's maybe, you know, some of the real small clients we might do where they have 3 business lines and a couple cell phones, we might not be able to find anything. And in that case, we'll do the audit and just confirm to them they got things the way they should be. And that's a good value to them too, but we won't charge them. But that's pretty rare. The vast majority, we're going to find savings just because of what we bring to the table, the knowledge, the expertise, and the clout that we bring to the table.
There's been so much talk about possible recessions. Inflation has hit small to mid-sized business owners really hard, right? 55% of small business owners claim that their profit margins shrunk last year.
Yep.
And you usually hear people talking about managing their cost of goods sold. Right? Cost to actually provide the service or their product cost or their labor cost. You're focusing below that line. You're focusing on fixed expenses that most people really don't think about.
Nor do they, and it might seem a little pompous, but nor do they have the expertise to look at it. And most of these things, even though they seem straightforward and they're not the most important thing for a business, they're very complex.
Right. How would I know?
In terms of how it's actually calculated. You know, a merchant services transaction could fall in anywhere of one of 700 different pricing buckets. Well, who knows that, you know? So we know all that stuff. And you're exactly right, Justin. We're looking at the stuff below their cost of good, their margin line. And all that, like I said earlier, the thing that's causing death by 1,000 cuts. And that's what we're fixing.
What's the average savings as a percentage? You walk into a business, go back to the car dealership.
Yep.
do you walk in saying, this is low-hanging fruit, thanks for letting me in here, I'm going to bang out 20, 30% savings, I just know it, because that's the math.
It depends what cost category, but generally it's going to be in that range because, you know, something like telecom, for example, I mean, it's not always, you know, it could be zero, it could be 70% if they've been under a rock for 10 years, but generally we're in that 20 to 25% of what they're spending range. Merchant services, it might be around 20%. Courier, it might be around 15%. Waste might be at 35%. But overall, it's probably going to be in that 20 to 25% range of what they're spending on all these different things.
If the car dealership had, let's just say, 20 lines, 20 phone lines, just use an example, are you so big that you could, are you leveraging Schooley Mitchell with the phone company saying, do you know who we are? We have 200,000 phone lines.
Well, they know who we are.
That's my point. So yes. Is that happening?
Yes.
So you're flexing your muscle with all these providers saying, we're Schooley Mitchell. We have a lot of leverage. We have 28,000 whatevers, right? We're leveraging the relationship to get preferred pricing.
That's exactly what we do. And see, the vendors, you might think the vendors hate us, but they really don't. They want to deal with us because, yeah, they might lose some margin on this particular deal, probably because they should anyway, because it's overpriced. But they also know if they treat our client well, they treat us well, then they're going to have a shot at the next 100,000 deals that are going to come down the pike. They want to be in that mix. So we have great relationships with these vendors. We've got relationships with 4,200 vendors throughout the US and Canada, usually at a higher up level in most of these companies. But it's exactly what you said, Cliff. We're coming to this negotiation, this analysis, with 29,000 deals under our belt. We know where they can go. And they know we know where they can go. The client doesn't know that. So that's exactly what we're bringing to the table, that knowledge and that clout.
Do you, I'm curious with COVID, if this is actually happening with an open territory, and we only have experience really. There's not a lot of brands like that. It's very interesting. Here's an example. Someone lives in a remote wooded area of Vermont. Okay. Remember your math, the million to 80,000?
Yep.
Not even close.
Right.
They have really nothing. But the franchisee decided to join Schooley Mitchell, living in a remote wooded area of Vermont,
yep,
because they could market in San Francisco. Does that actually happen, or that's, or not really? People market where they live.
I would say the majority of clients for most of our franchisees would be local, but you know, maybe 75 or 80%. But then that other 20% is where their opportunities took them. You know, maybe an alumni or a friend, or they've got other branches, or they got a summer home, or for whatever reason, they get clients elsewhere. They do what you just said in a remote. Yes, they've just got to have pretty good faith that they're going to be able to do the things that they do, that we do, the networking and the paid referral relationships, the client referrals, on a remote basis, but there's not a reason you can't.
So Justin, give me 1 second. So, and I'm going to turn it over to Justin. There are three, I read that there are three ways to join, right?
Yes.
What are those three ways to join your brand?
Well, the first thing I will say is a year ago, there was only one. You know, we were a franchise. We required full-time commitment. The franchise fee is $68,000, which it still is now. So when we said 70,000, that's because you got to buy business cards and envelopes, you know, stuff like that. But it's really 68,000. So that's all we had. However, about a year ago, we came to realize that there are people that need to keep the job, you know, whether that's because they need the revenue still, or they need the health insurance, or their spouse needs them to have the job, or for whatever reason, but they still want to build a business. So we offer something. Now, they do have to have, let's say, 5 or 10 hours available during business hours. And if they have that, they've got that flexibility, then they could, what we'd call the builder franchise, they could invest in a franchise and be a part-time franchisee. We really can't do it with somebody that's got no flexibility between, you know, 8 and 5, because right, we're dealing with business. They got to be able to talk to business. So, but somebody like that, they can do that. The franchise fee is still $68,000. We do finance a part of that without interest, just to make it easier to get in. So it's 44 up front and then $1,000 a month for 24 months. So it's still 68,000, but it's a little easier. There's a little bit difference in how it operates, but basically the same business. It's just going to be more slow and methodical. So those are the two options that we really have, for the most part, active franchises. We do have another model we developed about a year ago as well. And that's for somebody that wants to really develop a large business. So even though we can get clients anywhere, so there's no geographical restrictions like we were talking about, we do restrict where people can hire people or do direct marketing campaigns. So if somebody's got a franchise in New York, for example, they can hire as many people as they want, New York or any of the counties that touch New York, and they can do whatever campaigns that they think are right in that area. But they can't do, let's say, a billboard in Denver and hire people in San Francisco, right? That's limited to the New York area. So if somebody wants to build something big and do what we do in 10 cities at once, you have what's called a developer franchise. They can do that. The franchise fee for that is $250,000, but now they can develop 10 cities at one time, and they can select whatever 10 cities they want. So that's a more obscure one, but it is available for that high net worth person that really wants to develop something and have a team under them. So we've got all those options.
Dennis, are there minimum royalties for someone who wants to take this on as a little part-time side gig to start? Because the concern from the franchisor is, like, are you saying you have to produce a certain amount of revenue every year? Or are you like, I don't really care?
They're very minimal. Now, we didn't used to have them years ago, but we found out we had to put something in play to just not have somebody to, you know, make the investment, sit there and not do anything. So we've got very minimals that jump in after 7 months and then after 2.5 years. But even after 2.5 years, it's only $500.
Okay.
And you know, if you're not doing $5,000 a month after 2.5 years, do something else.
Right. You don't want to be in the business
anyway.
So they
really don't have a big effect. But the developer one, we actually, it's only $125. So it's very minimal for them. So they're not making a big commitment. I'm sorry, not the developer one, the builder one, the part-time one.
Okay.
So that's where we take less on the minimum, a little more on the variable. So it kind of equates out.
I view this as a self-employment model or a solopreneur model, right? So for someone who doesn't want to have to manage a large staff, there are a lot of those people out there.
I would say 80% of our people work on their own. Because see, there's a leverage model built into it because we do all the work. So if you can acquire clients, you can build anything as big as you want on your own. However, I would say to you, about 20% of our people do decide, hey, I want to go even bigger. I'm going to hire a subcontractor to get some more clients. And we've got some people that have one or two or five, even a couple that have 10. That's an option though. But if you don't want employees, you don't have to have them. You can still build a big business here.
So you mentioned the millionaires. These are franchisees, I'm assuming, that are doing seven figures or more in revenue.
Yep.
They're
yep.
not doing that alone.
Oh, no, somewhere.
Wow.
No, somewhere. The one that we talked about that sold for $4.5 million, he was on his own.
Wow. Holy man.
I mean, I have to, $4.5 million business. I mean, the profit margins, I mean, what is your overhead in this model?
What's your house cost?
Right.
There really is
wow.
that. I mean, they need a computer and a printer scanner and a cell phone. You know, they're going to have some coffee and lunches and chamber membership, things like that. But there's really, even though we consult about cost control, this is not a cost control franchise. There's very little cost. Anything you have as cost can be covered by one fair client. And so it's not about cost. It's basically a 65% margin business with very little overhead.
Who's setting the appointment? Am I the franchisee actually going out and banging on doors, or is corporate, is there some sort of an outbound dial strategy?
Well, most of it would be the franchisee building relationships with their own clients, right? Because it's actually an easy referral from a client to us because nobody has a cost reduction consultant and we don't charge money. So once you get a client, that client becomes a source for referrals to their neighbors, to their vendors, to their customers, et cetera. They also have shared revenue models where they will set up relationships where they'll share part of what they earn with somebody that gets them in the door. Our networking strategies are very, very strong and very effective because of the nature of what we do. So if the franchisee themselves is doing that, that's why we're looking for a person that can talk to other business people. Now, to answer your question directly, we do have an appointment setting department here as well. It's just nothing we ever say to people, you need to rely on that.
You can't rely on that.
It's not enough. It's an ancillary flow of maybe getting in front of a few more people. We want people though that can develop relationships, you know, themselves. And there's no limit. The leverage is in the fact that we do all the work. They don't have to spend all the time tearing through bills and tearing through contracts and that kind of stuff. We're doing all that.
You know what number jumps out of me, Cliff? You mentioned it before. 20 or 150 on the corporate support staff. The ratio to corporate
130, 135 right now. Yeah, that's roughly what we have here, and more than half of them are analysts that are doing all this work.
Okay.
We've got 14 people on our marketing department too.
The ratio of corporate staff to franchisees is just insane.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of heavy lifting.
We've always over-supported because we know that's what attracts good business people. They want to know they've got the support, the model, somebody they can talk to when they pick up the phone. That's what we've done on purpose, and we'll continue to do that.
Go back to the resale. Share what you can. I want to dissect the resale. This is a massive resale for a business that cost 70 grand entry. This person was operating independently. Clearly, they had EBITDA of over $1 million to get a multiple like that. Someone literally walked in. Let's just say he was doing $1.2 million. Do you know? Do you know what he was doing?
It was higher than that, but yeah.
$1.5 million?
Maybe even two.
Dennis? Two.
Very impressive.
This guy was netting two. Right, that makes sense because the annuitization is a three-year tail. So why would he get a 3-4 time multiple on that kind of EBITDA? That wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, it's
but
more
the customers
present
were there.
Value calculation of future cash flow is what it boils down to. But then we have some other things we add into it, like how many referrals from this client base, how many supplemental recommendations, how many renewals, how much work is it? All those things. We've actually got a tool for all of our franchisees to calculate the value of their business at any point. But those things all go into the calculation, and then it's negotiable. You know, the seller's trying to go up, the buyer's trying to go down, but that's really how it's done.
This person bought, it's all accounts and goodwill. It was $4.5 million of existing relationships, old school statement in a Rolodex, and my goodwill. I plowed a field, I did very well, and this guy cashed in. What it talk about, I'm fascinated by, but just a little bit more on the $4.5 million. How long was that person in business to build that empire?
About 15 years, but probably 10 out of those 15, he netted $1 million for himself each year too. He absolutely changed his life. And we've got several people have changed. Now, I always want to say though, when we talk about numbers like this, especially in a public forum, I've always got to let people know there's also zeros because they don't follow the program. But you know, this guy had five kids. So he wasn't working 80 hours a week. He was just working steady, 8 to 5, working on the business, built it up. He was good at it, made a fortune for himself. Built a great business and then sold it for a great value.
Do you remember his background?
It was sales.
He was a salesman.
Yeah. But I will tell you, some of our top people are not salespeople. They're people that are comfortable talking to other business people. They come from different backgrounds. You know, executives, management, sales, marketing, consulting. All those types of people can do very, very well in our business. They just have to apply our system. That's it.
Well, we're on the money piece, and I agree with your disclaimer, right? No one today is suggesting that you're going to make $4.5 million.
No.
No one.
No.
You're going to get out of the business what you put in the business. Let's talk about their earnings claim, because at least we have something in writing in your FDD. What does the item 19 look like for the audience?
Well, it's a little difficult to discern sometimes when they look at it because they expect everybody to have stars, but it's not that. And you know, and if you're familiar with the Pareto rule, the 80-20 rule, most people are, right? I always say I wish Pareto was still alive because I'm trying to make it the schoolie rule. It's not catching on. I need to talk to the guy, but he's long dead. Anyway, here's what I'm saying, that tongue in cheek, of course. But what I'm saying is that what Pareto's theorem was is that 20% in a business like ours, based on client acquisition or in a sales force, 20% kill it. They make 80% of the money. That was his theorem, right? And I absolutely agree with that. But what he didn't address was the bottom 20%. They don't do anything. And that's a shock in a franchise because they make an investment. They go through the same training. They got the same market, and yet they don't do anything. And I'm not just talking about Schooley Mitchell, any business like this. So the real model, and it's not even a bell curve, it's a step thing. 20, kill it. 60% are lifestyle driven. That means they want to make 100 grand. They make 100 grand. They stay there. And then 20% are dogs. And that's what our item 19 reflects. And I wish it didn't. You know, I wish everybody made a lot of money. That's what we do to train them and support them. But it always, I'm telling you, for 25 years, it's been 20, 60, 20.
So the bottom 20 is more a lack of effort than skill.
100%. You know, the program, the training that we provide, the systems, the program, the steps to follow, they're very...
Everyone has access to the same tools and resources.
100%.
It's what you do with
it. Even assign every franchisee a coach, a one-on-one coach. Everybody gets that. But, you know, I think the one thing, and we warn everyone before they join, you're going to get yeses, but you're going to get no's. And you're going to get no's sometimes from people you think should be a yes. Well, that's the demotivator sometimes. Even though they've been warned 10 times before they ever join us, they still crawl under their bed when somebody says no that they thought should say yes.
Yep.
And then they cut the grass and read the paper and watch TV. Nobody's coming to their house for cost reduction consulting. But the people that realize it's a linear ratio, we know our ratios. And if you just keep doing it, you're going to get yeses, you're going to get nos, but you're going to get yeses. That's a critical thing. And now all of a sudden I've been building everything. My yeses build everything. And that's all it is. There's no other reason that that 20 at the bottom don't do it other than they're staying home.
What's the math, Dennis? What is the math? Is it, let's use 20 outbound dials or 20 sits. What's the math on people signing?
We know this because we interviewed 100% of our franchisees to get this through survey, in person, by the way, at one of our conferences. We know our close ratio is 30%.
So, wow.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty high, 3 out of 10.
10.
Right?
Is that phone or that's face?
That's in person. That's it.
Combo.
That's,
it's or in Zoom, person.
Right? That's face to face. We call it briefing. 30% become clients. Now, 30% are also not right now, but maybe later. But we try to take the conservative route and say 30% yes, 70% no. And that might puzzle you as to why anyone would say no, but people are people, right? They say no because none of it's logical. You know, I don't want to pay you 50%. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You're paying the vendor 100%. But, you know, or I don't care about these expenses. I care about the cost of steel or the cost of payroll. Okay, but why are you paying Verizon and FedEx more than you have to, right? Or they think they can do it themselves. Well, they've only got one bill to negotiate with, and they certainly don't know what all our people know. I don't know that. But you know what? It's still 3 out of 10. And that just says to me, I need 7 no's to get 3 yeses. It's simply a linear ratio.
First thing I think about is, who are these 7 people that say no? Right? But Cliff, it's no different than what we do, right? It's like the person that says, I don't want your free consulting service. I'll go sift through 3,000 franchise brands on my own and figure this out.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen, I always use the example, you could stand in a street corner and hand out $100 bills all day. You're going to have some people say no because they think there'll be a catch.
Yes, so true. Yeah.
Right?
The service is free. I'm providing a free service. You're exactly right. I'm here to help you save money.
Value add, upside, cost savings.
And I'm not interested.
I'm out.
Yeah, well, there's a lack of trust. I mean, there's people who are just stupid. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But yes, but I still think that 30% is an excellent ratio. If you're a salesperson, you're playing in traffic, you touch 10 people and 3 of them say, I'd like to work with you. Wow. No wonder a guy built a business like you built. Yeah.
Dennis, you're a baseball guy. In baseball, you're a Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer, 300 hitter. That's right. I can talk baseball all day, guys. By the way,
you know what? I kind of want to go there, Cliff. When you're done with the model, because Dennis was an agent. That was my dream.
He still is, I think. But right?
No, I don't do that anymore.
No, Dennis, I went to school for sports management. I went to college because I thought I was going to be Jerry Maguire. I thought, like, to me, there's nothing cooler than putting those deals together. And then I found out that I had to go to law school and I didn't want to do that. And I bought my first franchise instead, which is fine. But to me, there's nothing cooler than representing athletes. I mean, school initial is pretty cool, but.
Yeah, thanks. And I mean, it was a cool business. It relied a lot on me. And so when we found this opportunity, you know, I had to make a decision. And I had a number of guys that were, you know, getting closer to the NHL. I won an NHL player, one Major League Baseball player. And actually my first contract, I don't know if you guys will remember this name, I negotiated with Lou Gorman, the GM for the Red Sox, who was this icon of baseball. And that was my first, it was a little intimidating, but I got a great deal from my guy. So, you know, that part's so fun. But going to 8 million hockey games and going to spring training and seeing a bunch of guys where their parents think they should be in the majors and they can't.
Oh, it's a grind.
You know, there's a lot of that stuff to build it up. So, but once you get to that level, then it's you're right, it's fun. But this is better.
This is better.
Right. Stick with what
it is.
You're an interesting guy. Yeah, you're an athlete. You played hockey in college and you played semi-pro baseball. That's very interesting.
Weren't you a manager?
In baseball, yes. Yeah.
Has Dennis Schooley ever gotten kicked out of a game?
Yeah. He looks around his office before he answers. I like it.
Who's watching?
Now you're getting personal.
I think you could probably tell I'm a little passionate. Well, when I'm in the baseball field, I'm basically out of my mind passionate. So
I can see you. I can see you kicking some dirt. Yeah, that's cool.
There were times, yes. I had to represent my players, right?
That's right.
You're a leader. Absolutely, you have to have their backs.
Anything we missed on the model?
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, Justin, about the inflation, or, you know, you can put the COVID circumstances into that, or a recession. You know, when times are bad, that's exactly when our service is even more valuable, because first of all, what do companies have to do in a bad economic time? They got to cut costs, and that's what we do, and we don't charge money to do it. So we are 100% recession proof, where so many businesses say they are, and they're really not, you know, and doesn't mean they're a bad business, but oftentimes they're not really recession proof because, you know, unless you're selling essential goods or services, you're not recession proof because there's no disposable dollars. But in our world, that doesn't matter because we're not charging anything. So really, in economic conditions, whether they're up or down, it doesn't matter to our people. They're still going to get clients that need their help.
I know you measure everything. How much money have you saved clients since inception?
You know, I think we're a little low on that. We tend to say $650 to $700 million, but I know it's much more. That's really kind of what we're estimating in our sharing period. But if you think about it, when we save a client, we just saved a client $1 million a year, okay, on their telecom. Well, they're going to save $1 million a year for years to come.
Right. You're measuring a three-year period. You don't measure what you don't know.
Right. So it'd be in the billions.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
right.
You know, one of the good parts about that is we also do this for charities and nonprofits. And, you know, it feels so good when you're able to put money back in the coffers of a nonprofit so they can do better services for their constituents. But even in a business environment, you know, maybe they could keep that employee on, or they can buy that software they need, or have a Christmas party for their whatever. Those are real circumstances that we experience. So there's an altruistic value here too. Not the main value, but it's a nice value.
No, I like that.
Dennis, you talk about saving someone $1 million. That's not a small business.
No, that was a utility, actually. It was a big entity, and they just had all kinds of phones and lines that weren't being used properly and were priced incorrectly, and saved $1 million a year.
Unreal.
It is unreal. It's fascinating. I just love the model. And the best part is some franchisee bumped into this person and then handed everything over to the corporate office to evaluate and analyze and leverage and negotiate.
Listen,
I mean,
whoever wins the federal government will change the world. If you can trim out some of the
No, they're the seven that say no, we don't need you.
Right.
We like $30 trillion in debt.
Yeah.
Right. That's hilarious. What advice do you have for new franchise? You've learned a lot about people, franchisees who produce it. What advice do you have for franchisees that enter your system?
You know, even the experienced person that has sales background and things like that, they've got to sort of realize that we know how to do this. Doesn't mean we're smarter than them, but if they realize we've got systems that we've developed, and it really comes from our franchisees in the field, that we accumulate all that knowledge, we capsulize it, and we make it, you know, replicable. That's what a franchise is for. So if somebody comes in, they need to commit to do the things we're going to do, spend a regular work week doing it, but don't do it your own way. Do it the way that works. That's the biggest thing I would give people advice on, Cliff, is to say that to them.
Follow the model. Trust the system, trust the process. It's so true.
We had a guy join us once. He was a former partner with KPMG, not really a sales guy, but he ran a good franchise. But he said something really astute to me when he walked in the training room. This is when we were doing training in person, and I'd never met him in person before. And he said to me, you know, I got to do something really, really important right now. And I was a little scared. I didn't know what he was going to say. I said, oh yeah, what's that? He said, I've got to unlearn everything I know. And I thought, wow, what a smart thing to say. There's a smart guy. He's had a lot of training. You know, he's a partner in a international accounting firm. He obviously knows a lot of stuff, but he knows he's here to learn what we do. And that's what he's going to do in our business. That would be the advice I would give to anybody, Cliff.
That's great. Yeah, I read something off your website. I thought it was great. It said, don't be a know-it-all, be a learn-it-all.
Yeah,
you know, love that.
True. Like we've alluded to, I've been doing this for a long time, but I mean, we've got a commitment to lifelong learning. I read a business book every single month because I don't know everything. I don't know a lot. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. Well, that should apply to everybody.
What are you reading right now?
Two of them, The Introvert's Edge and The Introvert's Edge to Networking by Pollard is his name. And they're excellent books for people that maybe don't have a sales background and still can be great at business development if they just follow a system. So they're great books and I would recommend them.
That's interesting. Anybody. Is that because you consider yourself an introvert or more to understand introverts for your franchise owners?
It's a bit of both. And you may not believe the fact that I may be an introvert.
I would not.
I knew you were going to say it.
It is the case. I'm not the guy that goes around to a networking room and glad hands everybody and shouts and is the center of attention. So that is an introverted person. But I do know how to develop a system and to follow it, to tell good stories about what's happened. And that is what people really identify with. And that's the crux of these books that I'm reading and studying. And I'm actually passing this information on to our franchisees. So it's a bit of both, really.
Love it. Yeah, you're a very interesting man. I've enjoyed my time with you.
This is excellent.
Guys, thanks for having me. As you can tell, I love to talk, so anytime.
Next stop, 500 units.
You got it.